Hello, humans, and welcome to Audio Face, episode 20 on the Syndicate 23 Network. I'm Dan from the internet.
I am Sean from Triathlon.
Yes, you are. And you're coming to us from where now?
From the one, the only, the Mochi Industries down here in Long Beach.
And
Mochi's the name of my brilliant free cat that just showed
your
up.
Your free cat.
And never left. Free cat. I mean, fuck it.
I love how the...
She just showed up.
I love how the adjective in front of your cat, your beloved animal, one of your many beloved animals, is free.
Yeah, or derp, or weird, or cat. There you go.
I love it.
That's how I name a cat. And my other cat is a dog, so anyways... Brought to you live from Mochi Industries, and yours is
Free Speech Studios
up in UC Berkeley, you know, doing them riots and Antifa shit. I mean, but, you know, no politics.
Antifa shit!
Because last week was pretty heavy in politics, you know.
Oh, yeah.
That was big.
I'm
surprised I just didn't go on like a straight communism rant or something, like for the hell of it, just to see how many people I could piss off.
I'm trying to not go on a straight communism rant today. Very interesting,
right? I mean,
tweets from our president this morning, but nevertheless.
I mean, I could say some things and be super woke, but you know, I'm gonna refrain from saying those things.
Donald Trump doesn't care about brown people.
No, exactly. I want to say something, but
here's
I don't know if
that
I
was
say.
Music related because I'm referencing Kanye. So yeah, first off, we're gonna do a thing we haven't done, I think, at all. I've been wanting to do this segment for almost 10 episodes at this point, but we've had a lot of talks about. There's not a lot of music related things to talk about this week, like news things, but we have this backlog of discussion topics that we've said, hey, we should do a discussion on this or that or this. And that's been building up, and so we're going to run through some news, because there is still some stuff to talk about, and then, like, go into those discussions a little bit deeper. So it's going to be an interesting, like, flow of a show. But I've been wanting to do a segment about, like, favorite new singles of the week that we have. So any new single that's come out that's, like, something that we've liked, and we have two this week. One is the collaboration that Hans Zimmer did with Radiohead called Ocean Bloom.
For Planet Earth 2.
Yeah.
Which is all about... The ocean, and it's goddamn, that was cool. Maybe we want to go into that first.
Well, is there anything okay?
Yeah, I know my computer is zub, but
okay. Shit is fucked today.
It's like drive is like trying to connect to edit offline, turn off sync when you reconnect. So fuck.
Oh yeah, drive does that every once in a while. Anyways,
there we go.
Wonderful logistics. So yeah, that sounded amazing. Like, it was very cinematic. So
it's,
it was like,
it's eerie.
Yeah,
too. It was beautiful.
Because it could have gone one or two ways. Because it's gonna either sound more Radiohead or more Hans Zimmer. You never really know. But
right,
it's definitely sounded more Hans Zimmer because it was a lot more cinematic. It was a lot like slower to kind of go with.
Yeah, like it kind of reminded me of a little bit of Interstellar soundtrack with the strings. It was pretty similar to it. So it's like Interstellar was one of my favorite movies, also because I can make fun of it. But it was like, it's a fucking fantastic film, and the score was, oh my god, amazing. So with that plus Bloom, which is one of my favorite Radiohead songs, I think it's super underrated. It was just chilling. It was different. I didn't know what to expect. You know, like it could have been. Yeah, super Radiohead-y or really strainy, but it was the latter. But with Tom's usual vocals, it was interesting and cool. I liked it a lot. And it was also, BBC put on YouTube, Tom, Johnny, and Hans all talking together just for the collaboration.
Did they?
That was really interesting and cool. Yeah. They put that on their YouTube channel, so if you guys want to look that up and have some of the three greatest musicians of, you know, our lifetime, you know, especially, I think Johnny Greenwood's one of the best musicians ever, really, because that guy is fucking amazing. All three of them sitting down talking is really, really cool. So, even if you're not a big Radiohead fan or Hans Zimmer fan, I think you should just look it up and see. It's really cool. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I'm gonna link to the interview in the notes if I, once I find it. So that people can really click to it really fast. But yeah,
It's like a 6-minute thing on it. It's awesome.
Yeah. Most of what you said, I pretty much agree with, though. It's... I just love how eerie they made it. I love how they made it ambient, which you would think makes it more toned down, but it still feels like very alive. It still feels like very flowing, and it goes great with the context of it being for like the Planet Earth, like Ocean series thing. I forget exactly what it's called. Blue Planet, right?
Yeah, Blue Planet.
Yeah, it just matched that so well, and with this amazing cinematography that they can do, and like all the technology they have to create these like beautiful images, along with the music, it's like the music is fit for the music is fit for the picture, and that's really amazing that they accomplished that. It's something that is it's not thought of that much, especially because we mostly talk about music, and with few exceptions, most bands make music to be heard. But in composing, especially for film and TV, you also have to think of how music goes with what's being seen. And that's like an entire dynamic that you don't really get to think about that much in music, but you have to hear. And so that's definitely something to be said for and like given props to, because that's a talent.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's what makes or breaks some films, too. Like, Interstellar wouldn't be the same without the soundtrack, you know?
Yeah.
Like, just floating through space with it is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I can't really say too much on it.
Yeah, that's...
And the other one is Run the Jewels, the new single Mean Demeanor, which is on the FIFA 18
soundtrack. Yeah.
Which me and Caesar from We Made It podcast.
A similarly good, but not quite good, as good as ours podcast on the This is such a weak beat.
Oh, that was awful. him and I have played FIFA for like our whole lives because, you know, we're fanatics.
I mean, like,
and
most.
Also because EA owns us by the balls at this point. Yeah. So let's just be honest.
You are drinking that EA money.
Oh, God.
Or EA's drinking your money.
Yeah. Run the Jewels has a new single on it, and it's pretty good.
It goes hard.
You have like a week of trying to acclimate to the FIFA soundtrack because it's always like really in your face and crazy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, whoa, what is this song? The hell? And I saw it was Under the Jewels. I go, that's kind of cool. Like, it sounded like them, but yeah, it went super hard.
Like, it definitely goes to like Killer Mike, especially his southern roots. And it's like, it does that like triplet
Killer
trap
Mike Freedom
thing.
Fighter over here.
Yeah, it's like, but it's like such a sick, like, actual, like, fire beat and fire track and the fire verses. I was very impressed to, like, hear that version. And, yeah, it's always great because FIFA, it's interesting. We didn't intend for it to be this way, but it ended up being this way where that we're both talking about songs that have to go well with what's, like, being played or, like, what's being seen.
Yeah.
And this is, like, being, mm-hmm. this song was made for FIFA, for this video game. And so you have to make it so,
you know, you get pumped to play football, you know?
Yeah.
And you're like, it's soccer in America. You get pumped, you know? You're like, you're in the menus and whatnot. You're like, hey, I want to kick some ass right now. It's a perfect song for that. Like, I'm going to be using it before swim sets or something like that. Like, it goes really hard.
Yeah.
I like it.
And FIFA, just as much as I love to talk shit on EA and as much as you can talk shit on EA, I really love that FIFA, they've always chosen really good music with all of their...
For the most part, yeah. I mean, there's been a couple of years that were weak.
Oh, yeah. Some years have been better than others, for sure, but...
Yeah, but, like, they've had Disclosure on when Disclosure was really new, at least in the US. And, like, FIFA 14, so in 2013 they put them on, which I thought was really cool. And they put on Omen in 16 and stuff like that. So they had Gorillaz in there, too. They had... Rhinestone Eyes in FIFA 11.
Yeah,
which I thought was cool. So, yeah, don't sleep on your boy. It's like, it's interesting because you either get crap or really good with FIFA. It's funny how that works. But you always get different music, and you can kind of get introduced to artists and stuff from there.
Yeah, when they hit it, they do it really well, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's for sure.
All right. Singles over. Let's go to the news segment. This is going to go fairly quickly, but there's definitely relevant things to talk about. So a couple weeks ago on the Audio Face podcast, where two, quite frankly, geniuses.
The best music podcast in the world.
I mean, honestly, I keep trying to find, because it's good to like know what your competition is. And we really don't have much. Like, not just in quality, but like there aren't many music podcasts out there. And, like, it's awesome. It's like, hey, this is an untapped market. I will take all of this market. I will, like, I love this. But, you know, it's interesting. Like, there isn't much out there. And, like, all the attempts and anything that comes close to it, it just feels off. It just feels, like, kind of manufactured. And it just feels like, it's kind of like the same effect with We Made It. Like, it's just more real. Like, we're having more real, like, conversations.
Yeah, like, we have our takes. We like to talk about certain artists. We have our own tastes in music, and then try to be unbiased as we can, pretty much, you know? And
I mean, like, we really have our biases, but we're, like, very upfront about them. I feel like a lot of these other places, they just sort of, I feel like they're almost like puppets, almost, for,
Yeah, because I listened to some a few years ago, and they were just dry.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense. It's kind of like the soccer ones are super dry and boring as hell.
Yeah.
And so it's more, you know, you gotta spice things up, make things wild.
Yeah.
So people can listen to it and then just hear some cool shit.
Okay, enough jerking ourselves off. But my point was that a couple weeks ago, or like many weeks ago, or some number of weeks ago, I announced that, actually, I know the exact number. It's 6. This is what happens when we record a podcast when I'm like semi-hungover. 6 weeks ago,
right.
Doom announced with Adult Swim that he was doing the singles project, where it would be like the Adult Swim singles project, where you have a bunch of different weeks of albums. I'm sorry, you'd have singles every single week, like new singles, but this time it would be all Doom songs. Like, that was the deal. And it was going to be for 15 weeks, and it was going to be in the lead up to Doom's big comeback. And I said, I'll believe it when I see it, because I don't trust it, because let's remember, this is the guy who doesn't even show up to his own concert sometimes and brings out imposters,
yep.
All right? So, like, I'm sorry, I love this man, he is talented, but fuck him. And so, the music project just, like, ended after 6 weeks.
Yeah, just abruptly, and I'm like, okay, that's cool.
That's, like, neat. And so, it's no longer on Adult Swim's website. It's replaced there as, like, this blank splash page, which I'll go into because I think it's a little bit telling. Which means, okay, they're wiped from the internet, and you can no longer find the 6 songs that have been released from the last... of course, you can anywhere on the internet, allegedly. Those songs are still available if you haven't heard them yet. And I think I'll do... I wanted to, like, actually review those songs, because I said that once they all came out as a whole, I would review them, not as an album, but just as, like, a collection of work, almost like a mixtape. There's only... I was planning to do that, you know, in... Let's do some quick math. 9 more weeks. Not right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll end up doing that maybe some other time. Maybe we could push that to next week. But as for judging all the quality of the singles, but on the page, it's very interesting. It's basically an excerpt that seems to be like almost from a biography of himself. From Doom, I mean. And it's talking about
right.
the car crash where his brother died in, I believe.
Oh, where question mark was made, too.
Yeah. If you didn't know, so, like, Doom's career kind of, he started as one of those, like, almost like a De La Soul, almost, like, one of those 90s, hip-hop groups, where, like, they were from the East Coast, and they were rapping about, like, sitting on the stoop and trying to impress girls and shit. Peach Fuzz, one of my favorite songs
right.
ever. But one of the members of his group was his brother, and he was killed in a car accident. And
mm-hmm.
on this Adult Swim page where the singles used to be, it says, what I remember of the crash. And then it's like this really vivid kind of crazy description, especially for like someone who's like, anyone who's ever been like in a pretty bad car accident will like really get chills from this description. But it kind of describes how Doom was like reacting to this at the time in the hospital as a little kid, moments after learning that his brother didn't make it. And so, because of that, the reason why I bring this up as being relevant is because, is Doom flaky, or is this a publicity thing? And I'm leaning towards publicity thing.
Hmm.
Because, if, like, and, like, it also kind of seems like it could be flaky because, it says, Adult Swim is ending our relationship with Doom, and thus the remaining Notebook of Rhymes will unfortunately have to remain missing.
What the hell?
So, on the one hand, it seems like maybe there is some, like, disagreement, and...
Yeah, which...
Because Adult Swim is ending our relationship for Doom is a very, like, strongly worded phrase for this, like, corporate kind of thing. Especially for Adult Swim. So it's very weird. And, like, ending a relationship is very strong because, like, this is a relationship they've had for 10 years. Like, Doom basically made an album with Danger Mouse that was basically a large Adult Swim promotion, and it was pretty good.
Yeah, no. It had Ohm on there, which went hard. Like, what the hell?
Yeah. And so, it's so weird. Like, is it possible that Doom didn't deliver in some hand? Is something go wrong with Adult Swim? Or is this, like, a publicity thing? Because if it went in a bad way, then why would they put this, like, very vivid, very personal kind of memoir kind of thing as a replacement on the page? It's so confusing.
Yeah, I don't know. Just everything... just seems went tits up, you know, and something isn't right with this at all. Like, I don't know. I can't put my finger on it.
Yeah.
So, but unfortunately, we're not surprised. You know, we've come to expect
Best thing you can expect is Doom, like, forgetting to actually, like, or Doom, like, not coming through is probably the most reliable thing about Doom, is the fact that Doom is not reliable.
Which is pretty sad.
Yeah, which is sad, because he's such a talent, and so many artists look up to him, and so many people love his music, and he gets so many people into hip-hop, I would even say.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, big time. All of this extra shit is just intolerable.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyways, going on to some more positive Chinese.
Yeah, so...
Arctic Monkeys, they have begun to work on a new album. They hope to release sometime in next year, in 2018. Yeah, it's like... that's cool. I like the Arctic Monkeys to a point. Like, it kind of hit or miss to me, but that's just my personal...
I agree.
...opinion, but I like some of their work. I'm trying to think of album names. I have to look them up real quick. But I know they've had some bangers in the past and whatnot, so I'm looking forward to it. Because they've definitely produced good stuff throughout the years. Like, late 2010s or so. Let me check.
Yeah, I mean, I've loved a lot of Arctic Monkeys albums, especially the older Arctic Monkeys, just because it was, like, this, like, super intense, like, fast-paced, like, stuff, and, like, rock, and...
Yeah, I'm just...
Sometimes the singer's voice, like, kind of gets on my nerves, and, like, kind of the whole aesthetic of this, like, kind of chaff, trashy thing gets a little bit too much, but, like, I also just, like, unapologetically love the music. And, yeah, sometimes it's hit or miss, and I'd like to see them hit, but... you know, I mean, we've seen mixed performance from bands of a similar type that kind of, like, try to do a new thing.
Yeah. Well, it's like what I talked about last time with the Killers, where I think they rely on his voice too much. I think that can be a little bit overpowering too. But I definitely like their first album a lot, which came out, what, 2007, 2006? Finally, Spotify loaded for me. Let's see. Yeah, 2006. Aha, I was right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, whatever people say, that's what I'm not, because there's a lot of bangers on that album.
Yeah.
So, it'd be really cool to see what they do. Yeah, because their last album was a while ago. So, 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll keep you guys
up. They even said that if we don't have an album out by 2018, they're going to be... like, that means there are problems. That means they're having problems. Nah. And so, like, it's interesting how you interpret that. Oh, I forget. I remember 2013, AM, that was an amazing album. Like, that was really good. I clicked in my head. I'm very optimistic.
Right. That's about mid-high school.
I'm very... My hopes for this album have just gotten a lot higher, honestly. Because I just remember that I love that album so much. Very many, many memories to that album. Anyways, speaking of memories, moments. Gorillaz. This is, like, this must be what it's like when I put Radiohead on the rundown. randomly in a week, because I just get really giddy talking about it. But Damon Albarn talked about a lot of things in an interview with Q. Girls from Q have done a lot of interviews and shit recently, or like in the past. But he did an interview saying that, one, there might be a surprise Gorillaz album, kind of like The Fall, which has me going, okay. And two, some stuff about tours. Let's get to the first thing, which I don't think is, well, is less interesting than the second part. So the first part is that they might release an album spontaneously, drop it kind of like randomly. And I have mixed opinions on that. On the one hand, more Gorillaz content. That makes me very happy, like, at face value. And Gorillaz, like, off projects that I don't consider to be studio albums, like a Come Home, I think that's what it's called. The Space Monkeys one, that was, like, the first album but dub. Mm-hmm. Or G-Sides, or D-Sides. Those have all been really good. The Fall was not great. there are some songs that were okay on it, but like it was made on an iPad and it felt like it was more of Damon proving, hey, I made something halfway decent on only an iPad while on tour in America for a couple months. And it's like cool, yeah, like, but just like
mucking around.
Cool, but like don't call this, I mean, he has every right to call this Gorillaz, but like it isn't really Gorillaz, it's Damon mucking around on an iPad on a Gorillaz tour.
Yeah, like, it wasn't Full or anything. I had, like, a couple cool songs on it, but, like, Detroit was cool.
Revolving Doors is, like, the most complete song on that album. Every other song just felt too repetitive or incomplete, and, like, yeah, it was made on an iPad in 2010, so I guess that comes in the territory, right? But it just, like, to put the Gorillaz name on that and like come out with that album was like really disappointing.
Right.
So I don't want this album, if it's like a surprise one, to be really rushed. Damon did say that like, oh, I'm sitting on like 70 or 80 songs from Humans coming out. And like I totally believe it, because like Damon just like
he pumps up music. It's like Gucci Mane.
Yeah, but I just hope that there's a quality filter, because there can be like a quantity over quality thing where like I don't want Gorillaz to make the 100%. I don't want Gorillaz to make the mistake where A, they make some of the mistakes they made from their last album, Humans, where it was way too collaborator happy or collaborator heavy. It was a little bit too long. I kind of hope they can avoid that.
It was sporadic, yeah. And it was just
great songs on it, but like as an album it just didn't really work. I'd like it for an album to work from Gorillaz. And secondly, I don't want it to feel rushed, and I don't want it to feel like incomplete either, because what we were complaining about with albums is the fact that artists who make albums too quickly, there's less variation in those albums, there's less creativity, so it's just like less good of a product, right? So
it just feels rushed and a bit lacking.
So I don't want like that to be left desired. Secondly, which I think is way more cool, is that the reason he wants, like, the motivation Damon has for making albums more quickly is because, A, he's getting old, and everyone in Gorillaz is getting old, which is, like, fair. They did this 20 years ago. Like, people who grew up on Gorillaz are now as old as, like, Damon Albarn was during, like, the height of Blur, right? Like,
pretty much.
So,
well, it's just like Radiohead's the same thing.
Yeah.
They both kind of came out at the same time.
But B, like, the ultimate dream that Damon and Jamie Hewlett, the artists of Gorillaz, have had is being able to have the actual cartoons perform in real time virtually. And
well, that would be awesome.
Damon says that, like, they're almost at that point.
Yeah, the technology's there. It's just you have to execute and get it to be reliable. That would be awesome.
And, like, to see that. They've clearly been playing around with it a little bit, because for the Sleeping Powder, the single that came out a little bit after Humans, they did that 2D model thing where, like, they just, like, mapped 2D onto a body and he was able to interact. And it definitely doesn't look super natural and doesn't look super glitchy, and, like, 2D doesn't look, like, as detailed as he's been rendered in many other like Gorillaz things, rather they're two-dimensional or three-dimensional. It still like worked like 80% well, and so definitely the technology's almost there, so it's gonna be super exciting to see like like live Gorillaz like as the virtual band.
Yeah, I mean that would just be awesome to watch, and kind of see unfold.
Yeah. So, next up, rape.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so,
yeah.
Enemy reports that roadies. Two tour crew members from the weekend are being investigated for charges of sexual assault at a show, at a college, I believe, too, which is just, like, really not a good look.
Yeah, so he was playing at the Schottenstein Center at Ohio State University last week, and a woman filed a report with OSU police a day later alleging she was raped backstage. But apparently the weekend had left the venue before the alleged assault took place and was not involved.
Yeah. So, I mean,
yeah,
it's just like it's kind of super shocking, but yeah, it was just like a really like shocking thing. Though, yeah, of course the weekend's like not involved, and of course this isn't really like his problem, but those kind of things don't really happen like just suddenly. It's often like the result of a culture, and so
yeah,
like
I mean, we can super dive into that, but that'll take
yeah. There's a lot that could be dove into with that, and in fact, like we will like again a little bit in a moment, but
moments.
God. But yet, long story short, there's a culture that kind of creates that environment. And if you let it kind of continue in those kind of spaces, so like on tour, then it kind of leads to these things. When you accept like locker room talk, quote unquote, like, and eventually those thoughts and those ideas kind of get like, I'm of course like in assumption land here, but like when those things don't get like shut down or like you don't like call people out on those, then it escalates, and because what is deemed acceptable by the people around you seems lax, and so people just get away with more things. It's like a basic social rule.
Yeah, I mean, it's a whole culture of general.
It's kind of why fraternities are awful.
Yeah, and it's just, well, terrible. I mean,
yeah.
I don't even want to get super into it, because there's, like, a lot that goes with that, but...
Yeah. But, and kind of...
It's sad.
Yeah, it's just like, really sad. Yeah, just hope that the best comes out of that situation, whatever it is for the survivors. But anyways, I want to move on to something that I did get to talk about a couple weeks ago, but definitely wanted to like get into and touch upon, because so XXXTentacion is, I think, what we're gonna go with his name being. He is involved in a domestic violence trial which got delayed this week, and that's why it's relevant this week. But I want to also go into more detail about what the trial's about. And so Pitchfork reported all these, like, super intense details about, like, what XXXTentacion did with this one, like, fan or, like, someone he knew. And these things include slapped her and breaking her iPhone because she had complimented a male friend on his new jewelry.
Jesus.
Which is, like, pimp name slickback level shit.
Bitch, you saying that every time a new iMac comes out. Oh, my God.
Let's see.
That was a quote, not me saying it, people. Jesus.
Oh, wait. Oh, my God. So, I'm just reading some of the details from this, like, article. It's wild. So, I'll read one. About a week and a half into, like, their stint in Orlando, the woman and XXXTentacion were on the way to a show together. They listened to one of his songs in the car, and she sang with his verse. Then she hummed along with a verse from a featured artist on the track. After that, XXXTentacion fell silent and left her in the car outside the venue. Inside, they got into a fight. When they arrived home after the show, he took her into the bathroom. And he was asking me why I was singing his friend's part of the song. If I like him, why do I like him? Like, do I ever look at his Twitter? Then XXXTentacion headbutted her, punched her, stomped on her, and put her in the bathtub, where he continued hitting and kicking her. He also wanted to cut out my tongue because I was singing the song.
This is why I hate males, because, like, they're so fucking fragile, like, mentally. Like, I've heard, like, I'm sad to say I'm not surprised in something like this where people get jealous so quickly and stuff. That's brutal. That's wow.
That is, but like,
so his trial's delayed. Why is his trial delayed?
So, I mean, do you want the real?
Well, apparently, she was pregnant too.
Oh my god! She's okay. So let me get some information on this person. I'm sorry I didn't do the due diligence of getting this before, but it's a 19-year-old Florida MC named Jesse Onfroy. Oh, sorry. No, I'm so dumb. Jesse Onfroy is XXXTentacion's real name. This is what happens when you do a show when you're hungover. But the prosecutor. It says, so, Pitchfork was told that the prosecutor is ready to go to trial at any point. I cannot speak for the defense counsel. So it's looking like XXXTentacion is trying to lar up and, like, figure out that situation before he continues. Lar. Yeah, but, like, this is fucking horrifying. Like, yeah, I love your point about, like, male fragility, but, like, just on a human, like, I'm dealing a lot with, like, the lack of humanity generally and culture today. Like, as if humanity is, right, like, totally dead. And, like, shit like this is just, like, completely fucking unacceptable. And you wanna know why this is even, like, getting away with it? Because, like, he is an artist and he's a celebrity. And I'm sick of, like, 2017's been full of, like, a lot of shit. But I think what, especially relating to music, it's been filled with, are artists who, like, think they are gods and, like, take that ego to the level where they abuse other people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's been happening a lot. And, like, it's sad to see it go straight to their head and they think, oh, I'm untouchable. I can do whatever I want. You could see that change within a person, like, the second they get successful. You know, if they go down that path, others obviously don't. But it's more of a norm now to see that. Like, all of this year, that's all you've been hearing about, really, is big old musicians and stuff being just cunts, for lack thereof a better word, and just doing terrible, unspeakable things to other humans. What the hell?
Yeah. I don't think.
I
to be clear, I don't think she was. She wasn't pregnant at the time. Wait, no. Sorry, hold. I'm reading more of this article. I'm like reading it again, and no, there's more. So in early, so the things I was talking about earlier, like talked about mostly, and happened in 2015, or like, yeah, it happened earlier. Later in October 2016. She found out that she was pregnant by XXXTentacion. It was planned. On the afternoon of October 6th, he told her to move from the bed they were lying on. He then went out into the balcony where she could still hear him and called up the person she had slept with while XXXTentacion was still in jail, demanding to know everything. When he returned inside, he told her, "You need to tell me the truth right now, I'll kill you and this jit." She said the jit was slang for unborn child.
Yeah. Holy
he God. Then started elbowing, headbutting, and but what is with this nigga and headbutting? like that shit hurts.
Yeah, I've got headbutted in soccer on accident, you know, going for a header.
He strangled her until she almost passed out. He took her to the bathroom and demanded one last time she tell him everything, or he would kill her in the bathtub.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So those were, I mean, just what the fuck? Like, this is so fucking sick and evil and disgusting. And I'm like, there's some people who may or may not be well-meaning who will say, well, yeah, but why did this woman, like, keep going back? Like, and abuse is weird. It's super common, and, like, super common with abuse, especially with, like, a spouse, that you keep going back to that person because there's, like, safety in that. And, or there are many other reasons, but you can't, if you're trying to blame the person for, like, not getting out of the situation, that's different. And you should look at what's the cause, what's going wrong originally. Like, that, there's no reason on earth at all XXXTentacion should be laying a hand on her in any, like, way like that. That's not how you behave with a human being. And, like, it's bullshit. I'm so, like, I had no real idea who this asshole was before, but, like, now I know now, and, like, fuck this guy. And this is obviously, like, gruesome and graphic and, like, horrible, but, like, why the fuck are we still allowing R. Kelly to jump around, too? Like, why are we not, like, investigating him? These are, like, maybe he's not, like, breaking outright laws, you don't, like, have a right, but, like, it's horseshit that we allow celebrities to get away with all this shit in our country and, like, in our society, yeah, as if they're, like, above this. Because, like, you know,
whole,
if...
a whole different thing.
Yeah, if this was just, say, Onfroy and not some, like, rapper, he would have been shot in prison at this point.
I can't say that.
Circular firing squad. And in Florida, he probably would have been hung. Like...
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that would have, like, he would have got butt raped in jail, 100%.
Oh, absolutely.
There would have been a lot of things that would have gone wrong.
But, like, no, finally, this person...
Fucking, hey, sorry, it took me, like, half an hour to get my drive to work again, so now I can actually read the damn show notes so I can see what on earth is going on. There we go.
Now, you know, another fun... Now I can speak. You know, another fun thing? My internet's just, like, in and out, too.
Yeah, mine is... Well, no, that's... I think I have to restart my laptop, but I'm not about to do that.
Russians!
You know, yeah, they know I'm German, so they're trying to get me go back and defer to the East and make the East Germany great again, you know?
But, yeah. Whoa. Also...
Anyways...
on that AFD shit, Sean, okay.
AFD? Right?
Yeah.
That sounds so weird, you saying AFD.
Right?
Oh, my God.
Anyways,
they're represented in Parliament now. Like, God damn it.
No politics.
Anyways.
So, yeah, also, Sean, sorry I fucked up the rundown, so some of the links are going to be bad, but, like, let's just, like, we can run through this pretty fairly quickly, or, like, easily.
Yeah, because I can't use any links now, anyways.
Yeah,
so we'll go through it, talk it, and then go to our main talking point.
Yeah, so SZA, SZA's debut album that came out a couple months ago that we really loved has gone platinum.
We both reviewed.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's platinum? Oh, yeah, it's platinum. Holy shit. That's cool.
Yeah. Like, shout out to SZA, another, she, I am pretty sure, is on Top Dog Entertainment with Kendrick, too.
I'm not sure. I'd have to look that up. But, wouldn't be a surprise.
Yeah. But, it's weird because there's also this story that I don't even remember, like, even saying that, yeah, so SZA is with Top Dog Entertainment, but apparently, like, they really, like, basically forced her to release the new album super quickly. SZA claims that they took drastic measures to make sure the album came out, and was even, like, willing to just, like, take the hard drive.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Like, which they went full gas in there.
Yeah, that's the story happened in, like, early August, like, super late July. So...
Yeah, yeah.
But, so, like, that's something that totally went under my radar. Sorry about that. That's crazy. It's kind of disheartening to hear from that label, too, but... Anyways, the main point is that her album has gone platinum. That's amazing for a debut artist to do that. It just kind of, like, shows her talent, which is really nice.
Shows that, yeah, like... Her stuff is good.
Yeah.
Yo. Like, check
it. It's nice that she's getting recognized as well.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's good. You know, we need more and more better musicians to get recognized out there.
Yeah.
Next. So, I don't know why you put this down, but I want to hear your reasons.
No, I think it's just like an industry thing. It's relevant to keep in mind these numbers and these facts. So, Apple Music has just hit 30 million subscribers, which is, like, pretty good for Apple Music because they had to, like, make up for lost time because they released their streaming service way after apparently Google released one, way after Spotify, way after a lot of other ones too. So that's good. Spotify's at 60 million as of July, and so Spotify's definitely like has more than double at this point. I'm certain that Hulu subscription did wonders. That Hulu deal probably did wonders for them.
Well, there's that, and sorry, I just had to close my desk.
No worries.
For the viewers. Viewers, the listeners. And also think of all the people that have Android phones, too. So, I mean, Spotify is still going to be the best.
Apple Music's on Android.
The most reliable. Yeah, but I'm saying when you have an Android, most of the time you're not going to want to use Apple
products. Also true. Most of the time. Yeah.
because that's why I have an Android
and the whole point.
Dell laptop. The whole point of me having a Google Pixel is to not use Apple products because they're crap now.
No, no, let's install iTunes. Let's install iTunes on your Android phone. What can possibly go wrong?
Yeah. They also deleted... I'm telling this for the viewers. The listeners. They literally deleted half of my library on Apple Music. Like, it's just gone. I don't know where it went. I paid for it. You know, I was chilling, and it's just not there. I go, okay, that's cool. And I tried to get help from everybody and the tech support people, and they just, like, nothing worked. So I lost, like, half of my music library. And that was, like... I think this time last year, and since then I go, yeah, I'm getting rid of iPhone now because it's like the only reason why I have it is because the music, and it's not working anymore because I owned a Moonshaped Pool last Monday and it's gone now. That's cool. And it's just gone.
That was the last straw for you.
Literally, like, I'm like, oh, I want to hear The Present Tense, which is one of the best songs of the past 10 years, in my opinion. Fuck, that sounds good. And I'm like, what? Where's half my Radiohead? What the hell? And it just got fizzled out of thin air. So, and then I go, all right, fuck you, I'm getting an Android, you know, as Robert Freeman says. And got a Pixel, and now you use Spotify.
Yeah.
And there you go.
But yeah, so, but the reason...
That's industry right
the there. Reason why I bring this story up is because, like, my last point on this, it's just because these... When big deals get made, like Spotify acquires whoever, or, like, they get licensing or streaming agreements, these numbers are what matter the most, because these numbers are leverage. And so It's, like, good to know, like, this is how much leverage Spotify has. Or it can make things more curious, because why would, like, Tidal, for example, have, like, which has a fraction of even any of these numbers, still have so many subscribers? So, like, not have so many subscribers, but, like, still have so much money or still have so much interest or so much relevance or play, right? And there are obvious reasons to that, like who Tidal has on their, like, platform exclusively is a big draw to that, and some of their high-quality streaming stuff. But all these factors are good to know as context for music itself. And also, like, These three stories, SZA, what we're talking about now, and the next story, are all kind of, like, industry-related, and I wanted to do, as, like, a classic Audio Face episode, an homage to, like, that kind of super industry into stuff. But to go into that next story super fast, which I think is also very interesting, Sony has this new licensing deal where it's a service where DJs can purchase, like, small parts of songs to use for remixes for their own, like, work. Which...
Right, that, like...
Go ahead.
This is interesting. I'm just reading it now because my laptop decided to perk up again.
Yeah, it's such a weird technology day. Like, we talked about this before, is that... And this is relevant with SoundCloud as well. Because we're gonna be...
Yes,
big time. We've had to think about, like, a post-SoundCloud kind of world for a while now. So we're still doing that. But this is what that might look like. Musicians still want to be able to use and distribute parts of songs. And remixing is just, like, a part of music now. Like, making music out of other music is just, like, how it... It's just a way it's done.
Look at Daft Punk. I mean, Discovery. And it's an entire album of taking bits and pieces of random-ass songs, remixing the hell out of them to where they're almost unrecognizable and making some of the best, you know, electronic music
ever. Hip-hop is, you know, remixes.
Hip-hop is straight remixes. Taking, like, it's not gonna go away.
Yeah.
Ever.
Like, DJ stands for disc jockey, because you take, like, the discs or, like, the vinyl, whatever you've got, and you mix them together. It's so rooted in the music, but at the same time, there have been... weird and dicey rights over how much of a song can you use, how much of a song can you legally use, and people have gotten the court over it. Like, every single time an artist releases a new album, or, like, many times an artist releases a new album, it turns out some random artist from the 70s or 80s who's trying to make a buck found that, like, one part of one song sounds a couple notes similar to another song, and then they have to bring Vanilla Ice out and he has to explain everything.
I mean, yeah, and that's been basically the musical Game of Thrones that's been going on for the past, 10 years now, since people have realized, oh, wait, I can actually try to soothe him or something like this, and it's just, like, a giant clusterfuck, basically.
United Suits of America.
It's, Yeah, it's so the new startup Remix Hits. They closed a deal with Sony, and saying it, you can distribute legal remixes. So you can purchase stems, so you know, little parts of the songs for musicians to make their own. So in this way, you know, you can't say, "Hey, you didn't. He just picked up my song or anything." He's like, "Hey, I purchased it, asshole." Like, you can't go around it now, if that makes any sense. So this is a good way. I've been trying to figure out a way to let people still remix songs if they want to, because I think it's still an art form in itself, because it's really hard. It's not easy to just clip out a piece of a song and make it sound cool when you change it.
And then update the tempo and make everything work together. Like, that's work in itself.
And then it depends. Yeah, like, you could take a rock song and put it into house music, or put it into rap, or whatever. It'll totally change
Robot rock. The
key of the song. And yeah, look. Well, yeah, I mean, they sampled
which
stuff,
by the way, they also got sued for.
Yes.
But
it's Daft Punk.
So. This is it's definitely something I want to keep my eye on, because it could go well. It seems to address a lot of the issues, making sure people, like, they get paid for their shit, people have the freedom to use shit. And of course, like, record companies skimming off a little bit of money off the top, puff of the cigar. But, you know, we'll see how it goes. And just, I'm sorry, we have to go back into ignorant bullshit. That's where I fucked up the links. There we go. But Young Dolph is a rapper who I had really, like, never really heard of. But apparently he was shot in LA, around Hollywood, I believe. And
yep,
they found the person who shot him. It occurred outside the Lowe's Hollywood Hotel. I don't know how to pronounce that. But I mainly I bring up the story because I didn't believe that, like, we still did this in rap. Like, we still had, like, beef where we tried to, like, shoot each other. Like,
right, like, that's like 90s to like 2008, like, you know, rappers would shoot each other, and then you just, I don't know, kind of fizzled out.
Like, even by 2005, rappers were like, the same rappers that were talking about shooting each other were like Ice Cube in it, making family movies. Like,
we're like having barbecues together and sharing wives and stuff. What?
Woo! Bricks.
Hit the damn bricks. Yeah, I heard that on the news or something too. I think it's last week or early this week. I go, what the hell? That's still a thing.
like, Young Dolph, is such a dumb name, is in critical but stable condition, which is obviously good. We don't want, like, the unnecessary, like, death of someone. This is so dumb.
Well, all right, fuck it. Let's just go to our discussion topic.
Yes.
Which I've been wanting to talk about for a long time.
Yeah. Would you like me to set the first one up? Well, I can just set up the, like, premise of this. So the first, like, discussion topic we have is kind of about the future of classical music and, like, how it is today, like, what's right with it, what's wrong with it, and, like, what's the future of it. Because classical music is kind of the foundation, I would say, for all music that kind of exists. It's like
Pretty much, yeah.
Everything's kind of a derivation of that. And so, like, how do you continue? And Sean, you're a big classical music buff, so, like, take the wheel.
Yeah, as somebody who's a pianist, too. So, it's like, it's my thing. I love it. There's a lot that goes on with the future of it. I mean, I don't even know where I want to begin, but there's a big thing of... also, we have this second topic, which is musicians owning the means of music production. And I think this goes along with classical, because there's this whole stigma of it, of, like, people, you can only see, you know, classical music if you're rich, you know, or if you have to wear a nice suit and go to an opera or to go to a concert hall and watch a performance of a Beethoven symphony, a Mozart concerto, whatever it is. And it shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't be like this thing that a lot of rich people put on, like, a pedestal and have it just for them. You know, it should be out for the people, in my opinion. Because when, you know, classical music came out, basically, well, with Bach, who did it first, they weren't making much money. Like, they were poor as hell, most of them. Some of them were rich off of Keane's money and stuff, depending if they're like a court composer and whatnot. But I mean, Schubert owned, like, in 10 years, he made what, like $1,000 a year?
Yeah.
Basically. Lived in like sewers and this and that. I mean, Beethoven was mistaken for a vagabond at some point, and like, it's, these guys were, lived some pretty rough lives. So a lot of the shows they did were just for the general, the public, you know? I mean, Mozart would do that. You'd have operas go for the normal people. Beethoven would do that for the everyday man. But it's been the past, I don't know, probably since about the, honestly, after World War II, I would say, is kind of when it turned into, like, this pompous thing, and now, like, you have a whole generation of people that have kind of, it's kind of skipped.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense, because now people, they don't understand it, they don't learn it in school. The only time people really know about it is if you've taken music classes and whatnot. I'm just lucky because I did take some classes, I'm doing that more now, but I've been exposed to it since I was a kid. So, and I've always liked it. And I think more and more younger people need incentives to go. Like, I wish concert halls would pair up with colleges and not just top universities, but go down to the lower levels of, you know, public universities and community colleges.
Oh, the lower levels, like public universities. Thanks for that dig.
I know what you mean. I was about this. Well, because, like, here... I was talking this with my German professor on Thursday because she's a huge classical music fan, and like the she would used to take students and stuff to the LA to see the LA Philharmonic because they would do deals when she was at USC, but that's because she was at SC and the children, the spoiled children, could afford that shit, you know. But now she's been at Cerritos College for, I don't know, like 20 years or 30 years at this point. And she's like, yeah, there's no way they'll make a deal with me. They'll just laugh in my face. So, and that was, when she said that, I'm like, I really want to talk about this on Audio Face, because I think more and more people need to get exposed to it. Like, it's sad as it's, like, they're hoard, the rich, stuffed up people are hoarding all of this beautiful music that more and more people just need to get exposed to. So I wish they would do, like, the Disney Concert Hall for the LA Philharmonic would do deals with community colleges or something like this, so that way everyday students, everyday people could try to go in and be able to listen to this beautiful music. I mean, it changes your life, in my opinion, if you hear certain pieces. And with that, yeah, too, I think more and more musicians themselves can get exposed to it, and I think that can change the industry in itself. Because now it just seems the culture and everything is all just crap, in all my opinion. There's so many things wrong with it, and I think if more and more people get exposed to, you know, how music really, really first, well, Western music, I should say, really, really first became monetized with, you know, written form and everything and a structured format of music, more and more people would be able to just produce better things, you know, not be copycats or not have a lack of creativity. So there's just, yeah, there's a whole thing on it. The future too is key for...
Wait, I want to pause you right there just for a second. So one thing you touched on, I think it's like a super interesting idea that I just haven't thought about, just because I guess I just haven't like devoted enough of my mind space to this topic. But the idea of how do you democratize classical music, I suppose, and like bringing it, like making it more affordable, making it more accessible, bringing it like to these different places so like people can actually engage with it and learn with it. Of course, it has to come with like cost. It has to come to, there has to be like some reason to do it. So not to be the capitalist shitting on your parade, but like, like, how is that feasible to, like, how are you going to say, okay, this thing that is usually this big production that costs so much money, we're going to make it cheaper, which means people are not going to make as much money doing the same thing, if anything, working harder, because in order to make things more accessible, you have to give it to more people. And I think your answer might have to do with musicians owning the means of music production. Let you continue. But actually, okay, go ahead. Yeah.
It's more of they'll be able to play more shows. Because if you have more of an audience, a more diverse audience who wants to see stuff, what you can do is you can have an array, a back catalog of music that you can play. So a symphony has... So with classical music, there's different styles of classical for people who don't know. There's Baroque, you know, there's the Romantic era, there's this and that. There's just piano concertos where it'd either just be straight pianists playing only, or like quartets. So there's this and that. There's so many different styles of classical. You don't need a full orchestra in order to play classical music. Hell, you could say, hey, James Rhodes is going to play an hour of piano music, and that'll change your life. So all you need for that is a Steinway piano, which most concert halls have like four of those, and you just need a pianist. So with that, that's the costs down. You don't need a full orchestra for every single classical piece. With that, you can choose which pieces that these people will play. You can even have different musicians come in and out of it, so there's always a constant flow of musicians going to play certain pieces, because they'll be like, hey, this symphony requires four oboists instead of the standard two that we have. We need to get two more, so then you can get two more, or vice versa. Okay, this one doesn't need anybody, so we can have them either sit out or this and that, or they can go to a different show, to a different company. There's a lot that can happen with it, and I think it's just more of it needs to get down from this pompous asshole thing, because the money is there if they bring it to a bigger audience, if that makes sense.
I think what you're saying, or like the way I understand it, is that the money should go instead of going into the pockets of like the people who benefit the most from this music, it should go in towards investing in getting a wider audience or reaching a wider audience.
Yeah,
it should go towards initiatives, and in doing that, you will be creating the audience that will allow you to lower your prices.
Exactly. Yeah, because then you'll have a constant flow of humans that want to go to it. You know, it's like, look at, you know, big rock bands who they sell out shows left and right. You can do that if you widen the general audience too, because there's only so many rich people that want to go out and watch classical music. There's not too many, you know, people of our generation that want to go out to it. Like, whenever I say that, nobody wants to go with me because they're like, what the hell? So yeah. I think that it needs to be really exposed to it. And then also what you can do is within that money, you can fund arts programs. They'll give incentives. So what you can do is you can partner up with colleges, so that way the arts can fund programs for schools, or schools can fund trips for students to go out. There's so many different roads that this can take to. And just something has to change from it, because
Sean, that sounds like a great idea. It'll never work in America.
Right, fuck this place sometimes. I think that's something that really needs to change, because more and more people need to listen to this music, because it's amazing, it's fantastic, and I think
it's got so much depth.
Yeah, and with that, it'll also expand people's horizons too into the arts, because now what's happening a lot in at least in US culture, not so much in a lot of other places, it's, you know, our whole lives it's been rammed down our throats. You need to do, you know, you need to be in the STEM field, because that's where the money is, you know, science, technology, engineering, math, you know, that's where you need to go to. So the arts has always been put on a back burner, and it's hard for a lot of musicians to get out, or there's no money there, or you just get shit out of luck. And you get pushed into a field because that's all you've heard your whole life, and you just kind of quit music, which I know a lot of people have done. So within that, if you expand just, you know, one genre of classical, you don't even have to go through a full catalog. That is, you know, that can support an entire generation of people to get into it. And with that, it'll broaden their horizons within a lot of just different issues going on, because they can look into the lives of some of these musicians, like how Beethoven was nearly beaten to death as a kid by his alcoholic father, I think twice before he was a teenager. Chopin died penniless and and It's Heartbroken by George Sand. Bach fathered 12 children or 10 children. Only like 3 or 4 survived. And like,
wow.
So there's these amazing people in music that more and more people can look to inspiration for things, but they just don't know about it, you know? So it just needs to be expanded out to just a wider audience in general. And I think within that, you can really change the industry, change people's lives too in general, because they'll be like, wow, look at what these guys, you know, came through, and they created this beautiful music instead of dwelling on it, you know, instead of going into drugs and alcohol, instead of beating up people, they just wrote these pieces to get it out of them, you know. Bach, when his wife died, he wrote this 15-minute long chaconne, a piano piece that, if anyone wants to look up the James Rhodes version. He's a British classical pianist who's also on a war path like me of trying to get classical to be more mainstream. He shows up in shows with trainers, jeans, and a t-shirt on, and plays classical music, which I think is fantastic. But anyways, that Bach piece was written for his dead wife, and it's this amazing 15-minute piece that is just really grips all of your attention and energy, which you wouldn't think a 15-minute long piece would do, but you just want to keep listening to it and just dive into it fully.
I think the great thing about classical is that a lot of mainstream music is, and by mainstream I mean pretty much everything that isn't classical in this context specifically,
mm-hmm.
is that there's a lot of repetition, but like not even, again, like because classical music is so different, every single term I usually use just on a totally different paradigm. The kind of the nature of mainstream music in this sense always has to be like, it's formatted. Usually there's like a 4-4 beat, there's a chorus, there's a drop, there's something like that. But with classical, there are like broad parts of songs that like you have like the fugue, you have like different parts of it,
yeah,
that can be
boom.
But there's still like, it always leaves you guessing what tone you're going to hear next, kind of what's going to happen next. Well, it's a journey you go through musically that, like, I think is like, that isn't captured in other genres as
no
well.
Like my favorite piano piece ever, which I can play too, is is a Raindrop Prelude by Chopin. It's about 4.5 or 5 minutes long. Oh, this episode of Audio Face is brought to you by Mochi Industries, because she's now marking my leg.
Yay.
Hello, cat. Yeah, it's about a 4.5 or 5 minute long piece, depending how the pianist plays it. And the first half is kind of happy. It sounds like George Sand said that it sounds like there's raindrops in the background, because he wrote it when they were on vacation in Mallorca, trying to help with his TB. And then halfway through the song, it just changes. The key changes, and it gets super, super dark out of nowhere. And it's this fantastic piece. But the whole time, it's a B-flat played, is like kind of the overall theme of the song. Is a B, I think you play B flat like 250 times or something like that throughout the piece, but it's amazing because it works. You just, I can't recommend enough. It's 4.5 minutes, listen to it, Raindrop Prelude, and you'll see what we mean with classical, where it's just, you don't really know what you're getting half the time, where it just keeps you on edge. Out of nowhere, it'll shift because it depends how the composer is feeling and what emotions they want to bring out, and it's fantastic. I mean, some of the Rachmaninoff preludes are like that, where his prelude in C is just in your face, mental, dark, crazy. So, yeah. I mean, there's just...
I cut you off. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I cut you off earlier when you were about to talk about classical music's future. Go and you want to go into that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, the future of it could go a couple different ways. It can die out, which is what I'm really worried about, or it can just really get low on this on the spectrum of people wanting to listen to it and stuff because of
which I think it's like slowly on its way to doing. Like that's like the default state right now. Like if nothing is done, it's going to kind of continue losing prominence and popularity.
Exactly.
Slowly, but definitely surely.
Yeah, where it's put on this pedestal that no one else can obtain, and you know those people are going to die out. So you have a whole generation that's kind of skipped, which is our generation. So it can just kind of fizzle out and less people will get into it, which is I really don't want. Or it can take my route, which is it gets expanded into different programs, to expand it to the youth programs, and not just high income but low income families too can go out and listen to them and bring out to more general audiences where it was originally made for, and then it can grow. And then you'll have this array of musicians to where they can even become modern classical writers, where there isn't that many. Like, the last... there's a few, but my favorite is Olivier Messiaen, who's a French composer. He passed away in the 90s, I believe, or late 80s. He wrote some beautiful stuff. He used my favorite instrument, the Ande Martineau, a lot. Because it kind of was in its infancy when he was in his 30s trying to produce music. I think more and more people would be able to do that, would be able to become composers and really, really write beautiful music, because now you have this array of technology which hasn't been intertwined with classical yet. Like, they did that a little bit in the 30s and 40s with the Ande Martineaus and theremins. They put it into different pieces, and they're some of the most beautiful pieces. They haven't been heard too much. But think of it, you know, how EDM has really branched out and blossomed. Think of a mix of electronic stuff, not your typical EDM or anything, but just electronic music within classical, if somebody can make that work. I think that would be a whole different genre of music. And it's there. It's just somebody has to really... fuddle it out of their mind, and we have the musicians, we have the talent, just they have to be exposed to it and really want to get into it. So that's a different part it can get into, and I'd love to see that, love to hear that. That's my one of my big passions. I've been talking a lot, my voice is starting to die out.
I'm sorry I didn't talk like that.
No,
much
it's my it. Field it's my field, like this is my thing. Other than
no, I was just so enthralled by like what you were talking, describing. Like, it's very like interesting to hear your take on it, because you're definitely into classical music more than I am, even though I like it. But like, I haven't gone to a classical music concert literally like on my own volition. I think I went in middle school, and that was it. And it was like at Cal State Long Beach in that like center,
the Carpenter Center.
Yeah. That was the last place I saw any sort of, like, symphony performance.
I went in March and April. April for Sigurós, because they're playing with the LA Philharmonic, and they played a couple of pieces from Icelandic composers before Sigurós came on, and that's fantastic. And they had, like, a piano concerto, and it was amazing. Then they had, and then I went to a show in March, piano concert in March. Of this year. I'm gonna go, I think Cerritos, where I go to for school, I think we're putting them one on late this year that I'll probably end up attending, but I'm definitely going to a lot next year, because I'll have like a set schedule for racing and stuff. I won't be all sporadic like this year. But yeah, that's like I dive into it, like that's my field. I does this, as Bam and Caesar say.
I does this
Like, don't sleep.
My last point. The last thing I wanted to echo is that what I want to see in the future of classical music is kind of a modernization of it. Just speaking purely on a musical level. Like, what you said about modernizing it, the way it's consumed, is definitely important. But on a musical level, I want to see it, like, blend with other genres more. I want to see how classical music can enhance these other genres of music, because we need that enhancement. We need that like change. I need something that looks like really shakes up music. The same way that the introduction of like synthesized tones did several years ago, like several decades ago. That's like what I really want to see. And like the other topic we had was like very similar to this, but like kind of branches off of it. But before I start, do you have any like last words for us?
No, not really, or else this can be a 3-hour podcast.
Yeah. No, but like a lot of what you talked about was figuring out for musicians to best control what they produce, mm-hmm. so that like people can get it and understand it the best way. And taking that sort of lens, a while ago I wanted to talk about the way Jay-Z has kind of transformed how everything about him is consumed. He does very few interviews. These interviews are only available on like his streaming platform. Yes, you can get other people on Tidal, but like it's pretty much Jay-Z's streaming platform and Beyonce's streaming platform. They have a family streaming platform, essentially. So like, right. They have that avenue. The interviews go through them. They pick the people being interviewed. Their outward image is being like carefully crafted and shaped.
Mm-hmm.
But on the one hand, that can seem like kind of cold and empty. And we've had complaints ad nauseum about Tidal as a business model and like what exclusivity does for like music consumption and how it hurts music consumption as a whole.
Right.
At the same time, if you look at the perspective of Beyonce or Jay-Z, they're not saying that. They're saying, fuck yes, we are making like so much money and we're controlling our image. TMZ isn't knocking, or like TMZ can't like try to knock down our door and like try to get some scoop information. Like that Kardashian shit isn't happening to us, or like as much. We're staving that off. We're carefully controlling this message, and as a result we kind of can be these like superstars and still enjoy their lives. And so on an individualist kind of perspective, it's super weird and interesting to like see artists do this really crazy, carefully controlled ways of making money. Like,
right.
The Sprint deal with Jay-Z is millions and millions of dollars. That's such like a good move, like individually wise, but just mm-hmm. like sucks for music as a whole. And so my main point, and I basically just made it entirely, is that I don't know where, like, I don't know where I want to draw the line, or even where I even come down on it, so I wanted to get your thoughts.
I mean,
like, is it ethical, I guess? Like, is it, like,
this
should be a practice. Go ahead.
There's, like, a line kind of being crossed by him in that way. I don't know. It's hard, because I see what he's doing. With Tidal and everything, and you know, it's a way forward at least, but it's also a step backwards, because now it makes it, you know, exclusive to that, so you can only get it through that. So now there's even a harder way to obtain somebody's music, but it's for that way the artist gets, you know, full compensation for it. You know, it's like instead of selling something on eBay and having to pay the eBay tax, you sell it on Craigslist. You know, it's something like that. With musicians, there's a couple things. It's hard because of record labels too, where they have so much say, so much leeway with what artists can do, because there isn't enough money for smaller artists to get up on their own, if that makes any sense. It's very, very rare that can happen. With bigger artists, they can definitely do that because they have the fan base and whatnot. Like Thom Yorke with Tomorrow's Modern Boxes, he released that on like a file sharing service thing back in 2014, which was funny. But he did that because he's like, you know, I don't want to deal with Apple or Google, whatever. I want to do this on my own way and say, hey, look, musicians, this is a way to get your own music out and get full compensation, which you deserve. Because that was when he was hardcore anti-Spotify. So he's trying to get his music out to the best of his ability to be able to get compensated correctly for it and show other artists right. how to do that. But the problem with that is, unless you have a big following, you're not going to hear about, you know, artists getting or releasing stuff, because, you know, record companies have such a big pull, and also in magazines and in review sites and this and that. We're like, hey, look, we have this artist coming out. He's signed to our label. Can you give them a listen? Yeah, sure, no problem. you have some indie guy from Nebraska who just made a file sharing service. He's not going to be able to get out, you know, or she, for the feminists out there who want to kill me.
They need to
do go home and rethink your life. He has no way they can get that out, you know, to a broader audience. They can get something out, maybe, or maybe if it goes viral or something, but even then, that's such a small chance
for happening. And like 30-second cat videos go viral, not really music, unless it's like an OK Go video or like something that's really creative with the video itself. Doesn't matter at all.
Yeah, or Vox uses like music in the background or something, and people try to look that up, or FIFA soundtrack, this and that. Even then, usually those are bigger artists or somebody who's already signed with something. So it's really, really hard to get the right compensation.
Just like break that barrier to like the top.
I don't know exactly what the right call is. I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
I know that's definitely not this. What I think is my point.
Yeah,
is that like,
yeah, exactly.
Not to get all socialist, but this is kind of the problem when you have capitalism that runs out of control, because when the incentives are entirely misaligned and you create this burning desire for musicians to make more money than they're being given, then yeah, they start acting like corporations and doing like hostile takeovers and maneuvers to get their money, and then consumers lose, and then they're like, there's lost economic activity from what labels can't do because the labels are not doing as well as they should. And so, like, to create that to regular capitalism, I'd align that to, like, the super, like, uber rich, the, like, taking private jets from, like, Santa Monica to Orange County rich. Like,
right?
Like, usually, people who just, like, burn through money and it doesn't matter, rich.
Yeah. The Bezos of the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, there's like some things where like at what point what is money getting you, and it's not like this is, I didn't mean to turn this into a critique about like wealth and morality and all that shit, right? But it's meaning to say that like some people are going astronomically far and doing astronomically well using the system, and most people are suffering as an externality of that, right? Or like, yeah, that's mainly my comparison to that, and I don't like the way that this is like, I don't like this like Jay-Z kind of strategy of putting out music. And so it's a recurring theme. I hope record labels can kind of get their fucking shit together, because like this is not sustainable.
No, not at all.
I just taked all the way, but go ahead.
Yeah. No, I mean, I have nothing else to say on it, because it's kind of this gray area, which we're going to see in the next pretty much 5 years of what's going to happen.
Yeah, we're still in a like, big transitionary period.
With streaming services and this and that. Yeah, like, yeah, that's the, we're going to see in the next 5 years. Like, I can't really call what's going to happen. Or I don't even know what can. I mean, all we can do is just look up different things and then figure it out from there.
I mean, can I make a prediction?
Yeah, how about it? Of course.
Based on what I know content, and I know cable companies, and I know how these companies work.
Right.
And what's happening with a lot of companies is that, a lot of media companies, let me rephrase that, because the media companies are now the cable companies, hashtag Comcast, right? But, the cable companies, the traditional cable companies, are going to the media companies. Sometimes it's a very short walk because it's in the same building. And they're saying, look, we're going to try to get the millennials hooked on cable. No, we're not going to do cable boxes. It's going to be over the internet, but it's going to be streaming like pay TV. They're calling it skinny bundles, essentially, right?
Yeah.
And so, essentially, and like this is, it's already doing very well. Like YouTube has one of these. I think like DirecTV or Dish has one of these. PlayStation has one of these. Sony does. So hey, like I said, it's going to be an even short walk for Sony, right?
Right.
But that's what's happening, is that in TV, the old industry is going, okay, let's change things. but keep things as status quo as possible. Because we don't have to change too much, because the more we change, the more it costs to handle all of these changes to our business model, and likely making that business model not as, like, efficient. Right. It's easier for a cable company to continue acting like a cable company. So if they can get millennials to consume cable as if it's cable, just in a different way, then that's just, like, as little as possible to make sure they don't just, like, bleed subscribers and bleed revenue, right? Right. That's what I think, ultimately, the music industry is going to do. They're going to find, like, I can't tell you exactly where that's going to manifest itself, but I know that the goals they have in mind are making sure that no matter what, they have to change as little about their current business model as possible so that they can continue making as much money as possible, but they're going to have to, like, answer this problem that there's almost this race to the bottom with music quality sometimes. There's this race to the top for, like, getting, like, really big and exploiting that system to get really rich, but, like, there's not really doing anything else for the music industry either. And consumers are just losing all around. And it's weird, because people are going to keep consuming music, but people are going to find different ways to consume music, and that's going to be lost revenue. And so to keep up, they'll have to change. But these are big companies, and they don't like to change, so they're going to resist that as much as possible. So I don't know what they're going to do specifically. I do know for sure that they are going to try to toe that line, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, okay. I could see that.
You seem like you had, you weren't sure.
No, I'm thinking too much. That's the thing. Okay. So I'm really tired, yeah. And I'm like out of words.
we've worked the shit out of this. That's good. We kind of got through the backlog of things to talk about. Next 2 weeks are gonna be so fun.
He's going to be in town next week, because we're going to see the Gorillaz on
Danny Thursday. Brown and Vince Staples, and which, by the way, I'm also seeing with Tammy on Wednesday.
Oh, god damn it. Dude, the...
And then...
Ooh, I can't say that.
Next week we have Talkie Monster and Liam Gallagher's albums coming out.
Yes, sir. Gallagher.
And we'll have a bonus episode on Beck, too. We'll kind of, like, go in, let's be, like, 15 minutes or so, we'll go through, like, the history of, like, Beck as his new album is coming out the next week, yes, along with Wu-Tang Clan and,
yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, Waptober is among us.
The un-Waptober, the burr man himself.
East Atlanta Santa.
East Atlanta Santa is back. The goose is loose. Again.
The goose is loose for the second time this year.
Jesus Christ, the guy never stops pumping out content.
This is going to be a very fun week, mm-hmm. and there's going to be music news sprinkling around that we don't even know about yet. It's going to be awesome. Hopefully the world isn't over by then, because music's really great, and in October is going to be a very fun month. So this is the time to subscribe to Audioface so you don't miss any episodes that are coming up. It's going to be great content. You're not going to want to miss it. Also, don't forget to subscribe, I guess, to the We Made It podcast, also on the Syndicate 23 Network.
Yes, sir.
They're talking about soccer. It's, like, also heating up over there. All the seasons are going on.
Yeah, Ancelotti just got fired from Bayern. Bye-bye. So there's so much going on.
How do you feel about the mad shit-talking they've been doing on Bundesliga?
They don't watch it. So they don't know what the hell they're talking about. They need to get me on their podcast, because they don't know anything about Bundesliga. God damn it, it's annoying.
you did a Bundesliga episode very early on that people should check out. Sean switches hats and goes from talking music to talking about German soccer. That was a very interesting. Yeah, it's a very interesting episode. You should definitely go back and, you know, because it's a soccer show about international leagues. They're talking about things that aren't American, in fact, mostly not America, because American soccer is
I understand.
Yeah. But, you know, definitely check out that show. Follow Sean on Instagram and Twitter at SW Suarez.
Yes, sir.
Twitter's got more characters now, so I'm hoping they're going to increase usernames at some point. so I can finally get Dan for the internet and get these to fucking match. I'll even take Dan from the net. Every single week I will complain about this. Follow me at Dan from the Web on Twitter and Dan from the Internet on Instagram. If you have been following me, you saw that I gave Miley Yiannopoulos and some of his fans a fond farewell from Berkeley that made the rounds in different forms of media, so check that out. And yeah, I'm super excited for the next couple weeks.
Yeah. That's it, guys. We'll talk to you next week then.
Bye.
Yeah, cheers.